The Football Sack.
Hello and welcome to the Football Sack Podcast. This is The Sack on Sunday. You are joined by me, Supernova Pete Novakovsky, and in the chair opposite is Miss Anne O'Dong. So welcome today.
Morning.
And also across from me, we have Lee from Footy Fans Down Under. So hello, hello to you.
Morning, how are we?
Very, very well. So today on the Football Sack on Sunday podcast, we are talking all things A-League, W-League, Youth League, Socceroos, and just because we can, we'll have a random segment in between. So stay tuned for that.
The Football Sack.
It's a dance-off here on the Sack on Sunday. And to talk through all things A-League, we've got Anne, we've got Lee. We're going to look at what happened in Adelaide between Adelaide United and Gold Coast United. That was the Battle of the Uniteds. And it wasn't much of a battle because the first half was boring. What did you make, Anne?
Gold Coast. There's an idea in football where you actually got to close down the player. There is an idea in football where you got to actually hassle and harass and all that sort of thing. It's really nice to be fancy on the ball, but there's another part of the game called defending. And unfortunately, Gold Coast have proven that they're not that quite adept at it. So for me, that was a little bit of a problem. Adelaide, on the other hand, plenty of ball. Unfortunately, creativity, lots of lacking in there. And that's the problem for Adelaide this season. Look, they've got some great players in there. You've mentioned your love child, Dario Vidicic, time and time again. Also, Sergio van Dijk, Sergio van Dijk, who has proven that he is a goal scorer if you give him the opportunity. He's very clinical in front of goal. Unfortunately, not that many opportunities, but the good news is they do get a 2-1 win, and Ramsey got in there in terms of the goals as well. So, look, they've got something to build on, but I think time is running out fast for Rennie Coolen.
Definitely right. And, Lee, what did you make of the pressure of Rennie Coolen? Because he's got the result against Gold Coast in front of his home crowd. Do you think he's still going to have a job by the end of the season, or is the pressure starting to pile on?
He'll win the league.
They'll win the league?
Yeah.
That's your tip?
Yeah.
Cool. Oh.
What baffled me about this game was, you go back to last week, and Blybeg's moaning about referees, calling them home referees.
Homies. Get the word right.
And then they switched, referees, my homie.
And then they switched the game from the Gold Coast to Adelaide. Brilliant. Isn't it?
So that game was, as Anne said, a 2-1 win for Adelaide. Goals by Zanikara Vella in Ramsey for Adelaide. And then James Brown clocking it one up just towards the end there. Actually came off Zanikara Vella, so he went from hero to villain in a space of about 30 minutes. What do you make of his football at the moment, Anne?
Disappointing. Look, disappointing at the moment is just going to be my theme in relation to Adelaide United. And the reason I'm disappointed is because I had such high hopes for them at the beginning of the season. At the moment, there just seems to be a lack of spark, a lack of mongrel, a lack of just the key ingredients to make a really good football side. I could forgive them if it looked like, you know, there were advances being made. But the steps are just way too slow in terms of just the short season that we have in relation to the A-League. I think they're running out of time, and I think they're running out of time fast, and we need to see some good improvements. And 6,000, lowest crowd that they've had all season. I don't know if that was in relation
to... The thing was, because it was technically a Gold Coast home game, Adelaide fans had to buy tickets to get through the gate. So it meant that a lot of Adelaide supporters were very disappointed with that.
Okay, that makes sense. But I still think, look, the Red supporters are very, very loyal. And we've seen that in the past, even when the team wasn't doing well. I think it was the 2009 season with Aurelio Vidmar. They were still loyal towards the Reds, and they will be loyal. But I think they also are used to a certain style of success and football from the Adelaide side. And at the moment, I just don't see them going in the right direction.
Definitely. And we're also keep talking about the James Brown experience. Lee, how good is this Mr. James Brown? Because as a singer, James Brown, his moves were pretty good. James Brown, the footballer, his moves are even better.
I think, how can I follow that?
I know, he does that. He sets you up every time because he just wants to play it. I feel good, really. That's all he wants is for you to lead him into that.
You should have it on standby.
He does.
I love
there you go.
But going back to Adelaide, I mean, a win is a win.
Yeah.
And I think the 6,000 who walked away from the stadium will be happy to get a win. And I think everyone involved in Adelaide will be happy to get a win. And hopefully that'll kickstart their season. Now, it's such an early stage in the season. you know, you've seen Hart rock bottom 2 weeks ago. They've moved up a few spots now. So Adelaide, once you start picking up points, you know, kick on, I think they'll go all right this season. I wouldn't be too concerned. From what I've seen, I think they've done all right. I know you and said disappointing, and that's your theme for Adelaide, but no, there's enough there for them to kick on throughout the rest of the season, and they'll definitely be in the finals. I know I said earlier they'll win the comp, but they'll definitely be in the finals.
It's not the fact that I think they don't have anything to work with. I think, for me, they're doubly disappointing because they have got plenty to work with and they're not utilising it to the fullest extent. That's the disappointment for me. Gold Coast, on the other hand, I don't think they've got a whole lot to work with, but they're doing as much as they can with what they have to work with. And that's, for me, the difference between the two sides. Miron Blyberg, as much as we love him for being the class clown, because he pretty much is, he is at least working with what little he has and using it to its full extent. Problem for them is, at the moment, even though they are doing that, they're not picking up points, and that is going to haunt them at the end of the season.
And, of course, you can get in touch with Clive Palmer. He's now on Twitter. So, Clive F. Palmer. Follow him and stay in contact with all things happening at Gold Coast United. Unfortunately, Miron Blyberg is not on Twitter yet, but we can keep asking about that.
We already see the Miron Blyberg show on Fox Sports, and it's more Miron than I can handle, so him on Twitter would be a little too much too.
Has Clive posted anything yet? I did follow him, but I've not read it. Has he put anything on?
Well, see, rumour is that he's actually capping his followers to 2,000. Zing! Oh, thank you. Let's move on from all things Gold Coast and Adelaide and have a look at Melbourne Heart, because they managed to get a 3-0 win over Jets. And it wasn't just a win, it was really a demolition of Newcastle Jets. Gary Van Egmont's squad. They've welcomed back Francis Jeffers to the front line, and Michael Bridges, who was formerly with Sydney FC, formerly Newcastle Jets. He's been training with the squad all season.
He wasn't in that game, though.
No, he wasn't. He was injured.
No, he had the flu.
Still, it's Michael Bridges. What do you expect? He's injured or he's going to have a flu every week. But let's have a look at that game. Goals by Fred, Martin Drugantich and Azid Bayic, which probably the third goal was the best one of the entire lot.
Look, one of the key things, I've spoken about creativity, and that's what I think Fred brought to Melbourne Heart, and they really missed him in the couple of weeks that he was away injured. And last night, there was that flair and that vitality about Melbourne Heart that probably we hadn't seen a little bit. And the key thing is they finished. Oh my God, they finally finished their chances. I still think they're one or two strikers short of being able to really contend for the title, but they play some lovely stuff. But we expected that from Van Schip's side, and they are continuing to do so. Still, like I said, they're still one or two strikers short of being a really good side.
But they've got Fred, they've got Mata Drugantich, they've got Macon, they've got Germano, who's the Argentine off the bench as well.
They're not natural scorers. They're not natural centre forwards.
You've also got Jason Hoffman. He's a key man for them.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just end the crickets there.
Yeah,
but looking
on.
At Melbourne Heart, Melbourne Heart, they are looking fairly good. They got their first win, and the players were very, very excited with that, without a doubt. And yeah. Newcastle Jets, what's going to happen for them now?
Well, that was a bit flat, wasn't it? You know, it's... You don't know what you're going to get with the Jets. I mean, hats off to Melbourne Heart. I thought they were great. They've been great all season. And at last, they got the result that they deserved. But I did expect a lot more from the Jets. I thought they were lucky last week. Not overly sure about Jeffers.
Again,
yeah.
He's back for his second spell, and it's not looking better the second time around.
Not yet. I hope it does work out. I've got a great tale, which I'll tell you later, about Franny Jeffers going back about 10, 12 years ago in Magaluf.
Hopefully we can hear this on the Footy Fans Down Under pubcast, which is coming out soon, apparently. So we'll state...
Apparently. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
In a pub.
In a pub. If you like pub.
No. Jeffers, the sequel is not better than the original, as most are. But look, Jekyll and Hyde for Newcastle Jets. Yeah. At the moment, I think Gary Van Egmont has got a little bit of a job in trying to change the way this team plays. He's from the AIS and he's been well and truly indoctrinated in the FFA, the whole technical direction that we're going in. I don't think the Jets have got the players to be able to play the style of football that he wants. And I think he might have to do an Ange Postecoglou and do a little bit of a clean out. Not impressed with the signings of Jefferson Bridges. I think you're going back to something that probably didn't work the first time round, Lee.
But it hasn't worked for anyone, really. In the last couple of years, clubs who have tried that, it's failed every time. And yet here we are, we're going back and trying it again. And we're going back with players who we've tried before. So, you know, trial and error, great, yeah. But don't do it again and again and again. What next? Fowler? Fowler going to come back?
I think John Cosmina said it best when he said, you don't take back ex-girlfriends, so why should take back ex-footballers? But you also have to look at, for the sake of it, the jerseys. Because Newcastle Jets, last week, home jerseys, they win 2-0. They wear their away kits and they lose.
But do you know why that is? Because the home jersey is Barcelona and the away jersey is Newcastle United.
So looking at these jerseys, as Lee just said, the home one looks like Crystal Palace and the away one does look a bit dodgy. But that's all right. Looking at some better footballing jerseys, Perth Glory versus Sydney FC, the away kit for Sydney FC looking absolutely amazing, and Sydney FC getting a 1-0 win. So the better your jersey looks, the more likely you are to win, obviously. I think that's the best way to look at that theory.
And can I just do a salute to Perth? Not because they won the game, but because they had their 15th year celebrations. By my friends who live in Perth and went to the game, they said they did a really good job of saluting the tradition of the Perth Glory. And I think that's something that's quite important, because when Perth came into the A-League, they did lose that tradition. It was almost like the Perth Glory and the NSL, that's done, that's forgotten, we'll put that and shut that away.
But Glory kept it around. It just proves that link between old football and new football.
But Glory didn't do that in the beginning. That was part of the problem, was the fans felt alienated because suddenly we've got this new regime and the new football in quotation marks. And it was almost like our NSL era didn't happen, but they still pulled the Perth Glory name, the Perth Glory colours, all of that logo. They pulled that in, but then they totally discarded everything else. And for a long time, the fans felt alienated, in particular when the FFA took over the administration of the club. They just felt like they weren't part of it. And therefore, it's taken so long to get even to this stage, losing three games in a row stage. But it's taken so long to get to this stage where we feel like we're part of Perth Glory again and we're owning the Perth Glory identity again.
Yeah. Well, looking at Perth Glory, they did release their best 15 of the last 15 years.
Oh, what a team.
Names in that list included Jason Petkovic, there was Scott Neville, and up front, Bobby Jezmatovsky and Damian Morey. Like, that squad, if you could have that in modern-day football, it would annihilate
Matt
the
Hornsley,
entire A-League.
It was just... There was some fabulous names in the...
well, there was
Sean
Jamie
Murphy,
as well,
Craig...
Andy Todd.
Yeah.
I think yesterday as well was the first matchday programme for Perth Glory as well.
Yes, yes it was. Yeah. And it was really good glossy mag as well.
Have you seen it? Have you got it on, is it online as well or is it just in print?
No, you got to talk to Mr. Neil Sherwin to get yourself a copy of that.
He was one of the writers.
And so was our own Matt G, who also got in the programme, so...
Yeah, Matty G got to write a preview for the game against Sydney FC, so kudos to him.
Perfect, and I think it's something we should see a lot more of from the clubs in the A-League. You know, let's get the matchday programmes out, and be it club-specific rather than generic A-League. You know, and that, fans feel a part of it. I think you touched on there about Perth Glory sort of losing touch with the fan base, and I think they've made great strides, since they brought the new regime in. And a lot of the things coming out of that club are really, really positive, and the fans are actually really, really happy with what's going on. Maybe not on the pitch, but definitely off the pitch. They're really engaging very, very well, which is fantastic. I think a lot of clubs this year have really
stepped it up. They've stepped it up. They've gone to that next level, which is really, really, really good to see.
Well, they had to. Let's be real. They had to. They had to start listening to the fans, because the fans were giving them a message last season. We're not happy with the way the league is being run. We're not happy with the way we're being disassociated from our game. And so they came out this year with the We Are Football campaign and inviting us to all own the game once again. So they really did have to do something.
that link is well seen with Brisbane Roar, and their supporters are working very well with the club, and the club and all the players are getting involved with the club and the local area as much as possible. Brisbane Roar are actually taking on Wellington Phoenix. That game happening after this podcast has been recorded, so we can't actually tell you what actually happened.
Oh, yes, we can. Yeah, Brisbane won the 34th game.
3-0.
All right, there you go. Brisbane Roar wins 3-0, and that means 34 games unbeaten. We are going to take a massively short break, which actually goes for 9 seconds. Stay tuned for that.
For the latest news, opinion, match reports, and for more on the A-League, head to our website at thefootballsack.com.
And welcome back to the Football Sack Podcast. This is, of course, the Sack on Sunday with Pete Nowakowski, and I've got Anne and Lee in the studio.
Hello.
Hello. And I wanted to jump in with a random section today because I can.
Because you're the host.
Because I'm the host. I'm on the decks, as Mark would say, because he's not here. I want to ask you guys, if you had a star player in your side, say Brett Emerton or Harry Kewell or Dario Vidicic or something like that, a star player, how would you tell them they've been dropped from the starting 11 of your squad? Let's see, Aaron, what's your first way of doing that?
I reckon go with what the Blackburn fans did, which was the big aeroplane with the sign floating over the stadium just as he's warming up. That's one way of doing it.
What did the sign say?
That one was for Keane out. So this one would just be, you're out.
I like it. Lee, what would one of your ideas be?
Well, given that most footballers say they don't read the press, I'd take a full page out in the paper. And let's see if he does. I guarantee he'd be buying the paper that day.
I think so. My idea, you could go with the cliche text message or an email, but I think something a bit more unusual, like a fortune cookie. I think if you take out the team for a team dinner at, say, a Chinese restaurant, you have a fortune cookie on the table and just be like, you're dropped.
You'd have to be careful with that fortune cookie because imagine if he passed it on to his teammate. Yeah,
like, I don't like fortune cookies. Here you go. You have it. And any more ideas?
Yeah, Qantas Choir. Ooh. I think Qantas has given us many good things and the choir is one of them. And I think, you know, Qantas Choir maybe singing it out would be pretty good.
Okay, so if we actually did hire a Qantas choir to sing, what do you reckon the song would be?
Well, I think it would go maybe something like, your football career is over right now. You're washed up and used up. And I forgot the words. Your football career is over right now. You're washed up and used up. And we don't want you around.
What's your idea?
I think that the Qantas Choir could work really, really well. But other ideas which I came up with include a deal or no deal style competition whereby a player actually picks what briefcase and decides what position they'll get to play. So if your star player just happens to say, you're off, then, well, he's off. It's a fair competition. Everyone gets the opportunity to play. And you could see the likes of Christian Rees playing as a centre forward or Michael Theoplatos as a centre midfielder rather than being in goals.
One thing I would do is if you've got 16 players and you want to choose your starting 11, is send them out in front of the home fans. And depending on the reaction of the crowd, that picks the side.
That's great.
I like that idea a lot.
Channeling the Romans.
Well, yeah. Similar to that, you could also have it style like a high school basketball team whereby you're picking players and you're like, yep, I want Smithy on my team. Yep, I want him on my team. You'd hand them out that way. And that's how you would tell your star player that he's been dropped from the starting 11. To move on to bigger and better things, we're going to have a look at the Socceroos. And unfortunately, it wasn't such a fantastic result against Oman. They ended up getting a 1-0 loss at the poor time of 1 a.m. So most people were actually asleep, wake up the next morning and realise that this was what happened. A lot of Twitter comments saying, what just happened? And a lot of people just saying, Oman? Question mark. Lee, what did you make of that game?
We talked about it earlier, and I think there was an element of complacency going into the game, given what happened last month. I wouldn't read too much into it. They will bounce back, and they'll get the job done next week. You know, I'd look at it as, okay, we got beat, it's a blip, let's bounce back and still go on and win the group.
For me, in relation to the Socceroos, I thought it was a strange performance. And I unfortunately thought, you know, we've given lots of praise to Holger in the past, but I think he might have contributed to that with a couple of his peculiar decisions, in particular Michael Zulo coming out of the side. I thought that was a pretty big call because he's been playing pretty well at left back. And to leave him out, push Matt Mackay down there, and put Harry Kewell, you know, alongside Kennedy and push out Holman, I thought that probably contributed to a lack of fluency in cohesion. And in particular against Oman, once they went down, once they went up in the 18th minute, they really did sit back. And we just didn't have any penetration at that end of the pitch. And that really cost us.
And of course, it's painful for me to say, especially a lot of people would know this, me saying Crusoe clock. Normally people would be cheering on, it's Crusoe clock, and be chanting along. But Robbie Keres just didn't have that same shine or that same flashy influence that he has had in previous Socceroos games. What do you think happened there, Lee? Or
I just don't think anyone had that zip about them. No. I think the Socceroos went into the game quite lethargic. As fans, you know, you said it was 1 o'clock and most people woke up the next day, so we didn't even bother watching it because it was a foregone conclusion. The Socceroos are going to win. And sometimes that just, you know, overlaps into the team as well. You know, let's get there. Let's get the job
done.
Let's get out. You know, and yeah, it happens, you know, to the best teams all the time. You know, and it'll happen to Brisbane Roar at some point in the season. You know, hopefully not, if you're a Brisbane fan. But it's not. We look at the Socceroos and go, all right, how are they going to react to this?
But let's be...
Lost one game.
Yeah, we have lost one game, but we have to also be, cognizant of Oman. They were awful against us. And to think that there would have been no repercussions to that performance against the Socceroos, we must be kidding ourselves. Because if the Socceroos had played as bad as Oman did, we would be giving them an inquisition. So I suspect that they got the same grilling from their FA that we would have given the Socceroos for that kind of performance. So they did lift. They played much better in that game. And it was more the Oman that we kind of expected under Paul Le Guin. And, you know, that was a good performance for them and moves them into second place and, into contention for that second place. And they were fighting for their World Cup survival. We should have taken that into consideration.
Of course, and of course the Socceroos are taking on Thailand. That's in just a couple of days. No doubt we will have match reports and match commentary of that all on Twitter as well as on our website, which is www.thefootballsack.com. Alongside all of those articles, we have a very special guest piece by Jack Quigley about the links that the A-League could be and should be looking at with the MLS. And Lee, you were talking pre-recording here about how you've been watching the MLS lately. You've been watching how the stadiums are built, purpose-built stadiums, and the fan involvement. Let's see your views.
I think the MLS, you know, it's, what is it now, 15, 16 years old, and I think a lot of the teething problems which we've seen in the last 6, 7 years with football in Australia, the MLS went through exactly the same. You know, right at the beginning of the MLS, they had a lot of marquee-style players. And what's happened now is they are still getting marquee players, but they're getting real good quality marquee players. You know, you're getting Lundberg over there, you're getting Thierry Henry, Beckham, Robbie Keane. And what they're also very good at doing is holding on to the good American players. You know, so the majority of that USA squad actually plays in the MLS.
Yeah.
So they're retaining it. And yeah, I touched on the stadiums earlier. They've gone down, the majority of the cases, the boutique style stadium. So instead of giving them a 60,000 seat stadium, they're going, well, actually, this team realistically is only going to get 20, 30,000 max. And they're playing in those facilities. It's great football to watch and it gets better all the time. The USA, since the start of the MLS, as a national side, have come on leaps and bounds. They've done really, really well in every competition.
And they just had a draw with France.
Yeah, you know.
Massive result.
The product is good. It's really good to watch. And the game's entertaining. And the crowds are good as well. And it's a great atmosphere. You know, my favourite team in there is Portland Timbers. A chainsaw behind the goal. Brilliant that, isn't it?
They've also done a version of Tetris, the song from Tetris, and it is amazing. So I'll make sure to put that up on the Football Sacks Facebook page, which you can like. And if you haven't already, you're missing out on all the fun and games.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I was going to say, along with the MLS, I think the other league that we really do have to look at is the J-League because, again, they're about the same age as the MLS. Yep. They went through all the same teething problems that the A-League had. You know, they had a fantastic start to their league for the first 2-3 years. They went through that 4-5 to probably 9-10 area where they had issues, and then they came out of that on the other side. The Amy Park, fantastic facility, and that is what we need to get more of. We've got to stop pretending that we're going to get that 60,000-70,000 even in Europe. You know, it's the huge teams that will get that in relation to their games. Like, you have a look at Spain, you have a look at Portugal, all around Europe, you know, you see Real Madrid and you see Barcelona with a huge 60,000-70,000, but that doesn't happen for all teams.
No.
And even in the English Premier League, that doesn't happen for all teams. So we've got to figure out, where do we want to go? We want to go that boutique area. And what will drag the fans is the atmosphere. So if you've got 15, 16,000 people in a 20, 25 seat, the atmosphere is unbelievable. It's sensational. And then people won't want to go to that for that game experience.
I mean, you touched on Amy Parker. It's interesting. I think I'm correct in saying Melbourne Victory are obviously playing games there this season, but they've loaded all their Etihad games up to the start. You know, get the Etihad games out the way.
So they can play at Amy Park the rest of the time.
For the run in.
Yeah.
You know, that's how much, you know, they sort of value playing at Amy Park. You know, and it'd be interesting to see how that works out. And they'll fill it. Victory will fill it. And that place will be absolutely rocking when Victory are there.
Mm.
You know, and they're getting good crowds. And then what you get when you get a good crowd in the stadium, you get a great atmosphere. The kids go. Kids are begging. Can they sit behind the goal? Mm. Obviously, you might let them, you might not let them. But the kids can't wait to go to the next game. You know, and then it also looks brilliant on the TV. So then if you watch it on TV, which incidentally, Fox have come out. And it's come out anyway. I don't know if it was Fox who brought the figures out, but TV ratings this year are really, really strong, well up on last year.
Definitely.
So if you're watching it and it's got a great stadium and you're not there, you know, you're going to turn around. I want to go to a match. I want to go. And Victory will get to the point where there's a lineup. You've got to get in first to get the tickets because you can't get into that ground because they're going to sell out.
But that's what we want.
That's exactly what we want.
And I think also with Adelaide, Adelaide's another one who's got it right. Their stadium is smaller. I think it holds about 20,000 Hindmarsh. And the atmosphere there, when it's you know, it gets to 15, 16,000, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I went to the Adelaide Victory game when we done Fans in Vans. And that
a bit of a promo for Fans in Vans. Apparently, the next one's going to be happening in February.
To Perth. Seriously, I left Perth. I don't want to go back.
You didn't have to mention that. Can you edit that out?
I don't worry. But
you're right. Hindmarsh, you know, that was up there with one of the best days out we had. You know, it was a great night, you know, and a cracking little stadium. And it made for a good atmosphere. Because all on the gantries, because people said, oh, there was empty seats. So they didn't fill it. Well, actually, on the gantries, there was thousands stood there, you know, it was absolutely packed, you know, and everything about it was right. It was policed very, very well. And you know, we were sat behind, they had a proper allocated away end for the Victory fans, you know, and it was a great night and a proper football stadium, you know. So, and tell me, any, take the big AFL teams out there. No other code gets massive crowds.
No.
You look at Rugby League, and I'm sorry to digress onto a different code, but they don't get massive crowds.
No.
You know, let's learn from them. They play out at Homebush, right, with 15, 16,000. Ridiculous. Even the rugby union, the players don't want to go to Homebush, so why are we going to Homebush? Why are the Socceroos at Homebush the other week? Stupid. Wednesday night, Tuesday night, out at Homebush. Nearly 30,000 Drake crowd. That I think for Tuesday night. Get it at the SFS then.
Yeah, you have a better atmosphere at the SFS where it's 45,000 seater, and it would look more full, and it's much better off.
Yeah.
And that has been the Football Sack on Sunday podcast. Thank you very much, Lee, for being in the studio, and Anne.
No problems.
And don't forget to grab the podcast, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, as well as follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. That has been the Sack on Sunday. Enjoy.
That was the Football Sack podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe on iTunes to stay up to date with all of the football action across Australia.